I wanted to, on the feelings of guilt and shame, I wanted to focus on this emotion tonight. And additionally, aside from the fact that it's a fundamental aspect of bhakti or a symptom of bhakti, that one feels unworthy to be a devotee or worthy to serve Krishna, another example or another problem that we run into is that materially, psychologically, many people feel unworthy for many things in life. They don't feel they deserve, I would just say, speaking materially, some people don't believe they deserve the good things in life for whatever reason. That there may be so many reasons, and maybe we'll get into that later. But it's very common when people lack self-confidence for various reasons. People don't like themselves for various reasons. And when you apply these kinds of ways of thinking into Krishna consciousness, then you get this formula where someone feels that I'm not worthy really to receive Krishna's mercy. I'm not worthy to be a devotee. And that can have, if it's taken in the wrong way, in a negative way, in a way which is not healthy mentally or emotionally, then what happens is someone becomes discouraged. And we might think, why try? Why try so hard? I can't do it. And we're actually, sometimes be afraid of being successful. Because if you feel you're not worthy of being successful, then in some way, subtly, you would ruin your own success. You would work against yourself. You would prevent yourself from being too successful, feeling that you don't deserve it. So there is that's a psychological problem. And as we discussed last week, sometimes psychological problems affect our devotional service. And then we misunderstand qualities which would be helpful, like feeling unworthy would be helpful, or qualities like humility, which are absolutely necessary, but we could misunderstand them, perceive them in the wrong way, and then it becomes detrimental for us. So let's look at the devotional side of unworthiness first and why it's a qualification. Well, feeling unworthy or unqualified to be a devotee is the symptom of a devotee. One time Prabhupada said, actually, we're not devotees, we're trying to be. And then he said, a devotee is a very big word, meaning it's a very big thing to be a devotee, or to call oneself a devotee would, technically speaking, mean that we have love of Krishna, that we are beyond anartha nivritti, at least to ruchi and beyond, probably beyond. Then maybe one could say I'm a devotee. But the irony is that when one reaches that level, one doesn't feel oneself a devotee. But at least in our position, Prabhupada was instructing us, no, we should think I'm trying to become a devotee. I'm not a devotee. So I'm not a devotee, and I have so many disqualifications. So I don't feel that I can ever, a devotee, one natural feeling of a devotee who's advancing is the feeling that I don't think I can ever become pure. That can have a positive effect. It can have a negative effect. The negative effect is that since I don't think I can ever become pure, I won't try. What's the use anyway if I can't do it? Why try something that I'll only fail? So the positive effect is that I'm unworthy, but that unworthiness makes me try harder, or makes me want it more, or makes me pray more, or makes me more dependent, or makes me beg Krishna more because I don't deserve it and I can't qualify myself for it. Therefore, the only way I can get it is to beg Krishna for it. So in an advanced devotee's life, and in the sprouts of our advancement, if we're in Krishna consciousness in the right way, this is how we would feel. Whenever we feel disqualified in some way, or unworthy of being called a devotee, unworthy even of achieving Krishna or Srila Prabhupada's mercy, then it would make us more make us feel more helpless. It would cause us to pray more to Krishna to help us. Say, Krishna, look at me. I am unworthy. So what's the consequence? Well, I need your help to become Krishna conscious. And you see this in the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One song is very interesting. It's interesting because the song is called Amara Jivana, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing his life. He's describing his life to Krishna. And the reason it's interesting is because in this song, he's describing how he lived his life out of Krishna consciousness. But he's not asking for anything. He's just telling Krishna, this is the story of my life. And he's telling Krishna how he avoided Krishna and how he became absorbed in material life, overcome by Maya, overcome by illusion, totally forgot Krishna. And it doesn't end with any kind of prayer or petition. Krishna, look what I did. Please help me. It's just, Krishna, this is the mess of my life. This is how I live my life in forgetfulness of you. So it's an admittance. Okay, I was not Krishna conscious. I didn't do Krishna conscious things. So this is the behavior of a devotee. This is the attitude of a devotee to go to Krishna and say, Krishna, look at the mess I've created in my life. Look at how I've tried to avoid you. Look at how I have so many bad qualities. But so Bhaktivinoda just explains it. That's all he does. In other songs, he explains it. And then he goes on to say, Krishna, because of this, I'm helpless. And therefore, I need you. I desperately need you. And the reason I desperately need you is because I'm unqualified. I'm unworthy of being called a devotee. I don't have what it takes. So that's the proper attitude. The more unworthy we realize we are, the more we pray to Krishna to help us, feeling that without his help, I can't succeed because I can't look to anything that I have which I can call a good quality of mine or something that makes me worthy of achieving Krishna consciousness. I can only find that I don't have the qualities that are necessary, the qualifications that are necessary. So what all I can do is ask for some special mercy, some special kindness, something that Krishna can just bestow upon me, even though I don't deserve it. Now, this is the proper attitude. This is how we should be thinking. So whenever we meditate on any problem we have, any disqualification we have, rather than becoming discouraged or depressed, we should think, this is an opportunity or this is a calling for me in recognition of my disqualification to call out to Krishna, to become a beggar, to tell Krishna, I'm helpless without you. I cannot do this on my own. Just today, I had an interesting conversation with a devotee. And Haribol Lila, Palak Paneer. Now you're with Palak Paneer. Wonderful. So, and all of you else, Shaloni, Pallavi, Bhakti and Carol, Ganapati, and all the others that I haven't mentioned. So this devotee was saying that he had been dealing with a serious problem in his spiritual life, and he didn't feel that he had the strength to overcome it because it was a persistent problem. I'm sure we've all experienced something like this. Something that we just feel helpless in dealing with. So he said actually he had given up because he didn't know how to solve the problem. He didn't know what he could do. He felt, I can't do anything. All I can do now at this point is tell Krishna I'm helpless. There's nothing I can do. He felt basically he was at the end of his rope and therefore there was no other recourse than to just fall at Krishna's feet and say, Krishna, this is it. This is all I can do. So he told me, it was a very happy ending, he told me, at that point when he did that, there was a transformation in his life. And by Krishna's grace, the problem that he was having, or this habit that he was giving into, he was able to overcome it. And he said he hasn't returned to that habit in the last 6 months or a year, but he said before that, he was struggling with it. It was really, really difficult. So, dependence on Krishna is one of the six symptoms of surrender. And this is a real life story of a practicing devotee who achieved tremendous results just from becoming helplessly dependent on Krishna to solve his problem. So you see how it works, is if we get to this point where we feel, okay, there's nothing I can do. I mean, I'm trying, I make the effort. But beyond that, because I feel so unqualified, I feel that I don't personally have the strength, the ability, the intelligence, whatever it is, to become Krishna conscious. I am dependent on Krishna totally. And then Krishna comes. And it's interesting because our logical mind would say, well, Krishna will come to help us if we're qualified, or we'll get help because of our qualifications. I mean, that's the way it works in the material world. You have qualifications, you get the job. If you're disqualified, you don't get the job. You get the job and then they find you're not qualified, then you get fired. But it works differently in Krishna consciousness because Krishna is more sympathetic the more helpless the devotee is. And we find this in the stories in the Bhagavatam with Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti was widowed. And it's said that Krishna showed more mercy on her than other women who were still married, because in her widowed condition, she became more dependent on Krishna. And so because she became more helpless, more dependent, Krishna showed her more kindness, or took more care of her because she needed it. So the irony is that qualifications are not what helps us per se, but rather the lack of qualification, which then, if it makes us more dependent on Krishna, more prayerful, that makes us, that brings us closer to Krishna, and that attracts Krishna's mercy. Now, Mahaprabhu is called Patita Pavana. Patita Pavana means, Shaloni says it's not working. Well, why don't you reboot your computer? Anyway, it's being recorded. Hopefully. Pallavi, why don't you help her somehow? So Mahaprabhu is called Patita Pavana. And Patita means fallen, Pavana means purifier or the friend. So what we understand is that Lord Chaitanya shows mercy to those who are most fallen. The more fallen one is, the more mercy he shows. It's a little contrary to logic, and it's contrary to the traditional Vedic system, where one, in order to practice the sadhana, the spiritual sadhana, one must be elevated to the Brahman status. So there's that means qualified. Or worse still, born in a Brahmin family and then going through different samskars or purificatory rites, taking initiation from Guru, and then being qualified to chant Vedic mantras and perform different pujas and samskars. Where in Kali Yuga, and particularly after the appearance of Mahaprabhu, the rules changed. Basically, they were the total opposite, where Mahaprabhu was extending his mercy to people who weren't qualified, and the less they were qualified, the more mercy was extended. And you may ask, well, why was he doing that? Because this doesn't make sense. And the only answer you can give is that it doesn't have to make sense because it's his desire. Just like somebody wants to give in charity, they may give in charity to anyone they want. It doesn't have to make sense to us. It's their choice. So Mahaprabhu chose to do this. And so we have the story of Jagai and Madai. And what the story of Jagai and Madai exemplifies is how Mahaprabhu's mercy extended to the most fallen. Jagai and Madai are considered the most fallen of the time. And so Nityananda Prabhu told Mahaprabhu, we should deliver Jagai and Madai, because if we do, then you will be known, then your real mission will be revealed, that you have come to save and give mercy to those who are the most fallen. So the qualification then does not become anything other than the desire to be Krishna conscious and the willingness to receive the mercy. And how is the mercy given? The mercy is given through instruction. So it's a willingness and a sincerity to receive the instruction and do one's best to execute the instruction. If you want to say there's a qualification, that's the qualification. There's no qualification in terms of past activities or no disqualification in terms of past sins. But the qualification is to accept the mercy. Now, we should, there in a sense, therefore, one should not lament that one is feeling disqualified, or one should not lament that one is feeling unworthy, but one could actually rejoice, oh, I'm unqualified, I'm unworthy, therefore I become a candidate for the Lord's mercy. And that's why the devotees pray and say, my dear Lord, I'm the most fallen, and therefore you should give me your mercy first. Now, how do we, as sadhana, as practitioners, when we're practicing sadhana, how do we relate to feelings of unworthiness and humility in a way that we can get this result, rather than the two ways that we can be at fault is the humility would be totally artificial, and we really are not exhibiting humility, but we're talking in a humble way, or we're trying to fake humility, which is far beyond anything we realize about humility, or a kind of humility that's not really, it looks like humility, but it's not, and it's more of a self-absorption and, oh, I'm so low, I'm so bad, that kind of feeling, which then produces the, what's the use of doing anything? So we want to avoid both of those. Now, if we go back to the feelings that we were talking about before of feeling unqualified, but that disqualification inspiring us to execute Krishna consciousness, that we could define as humility. And I've told the story before. I'll tell it again for those of you who haven't heard it. Two devotees came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and they said, Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, we've been chanting for 20 years and we're not making any spiritual advancement. He said, oh, this is very good. And so, of course, they were shocked. What's good about the fact that we're not making spiritual advancement? And he said, what's good about it is I see that you're humble, because you're not feeling that you're advancing. Whereas if you came to me and said, we've been chanting 20 years and we're becoming very advanced, then I'd be concerned that you're not developing humility, but actually you're becoming proud. So to feel oneself disqualified, to feel that we're not making any advancement, if it's a genuine emotion, if it's not artificial, if it's not a show, if it's how one feels, but it is not a discouraging feeling, it's just kind of a reality, a checking in with oneself as a reality. This is my position, this is my condition, and I feel I'm not really making much advancement. I'm trying. I don't feel I'm Krishna conscious. But we're not discouraged by that. Or it's just, it's what it is. That's humility. Now, the result of that kind of feeling is, as we were saying before, this kind of helplessness. Well, because I don't feel advanced, then I become helpless. Or I feel, I don't become helpless, I feel helpless, and therefore I ask Krishna, please help me, give me guidance, give me intelligence. Whatever I need, give it to me, because on my own, I'd lack these qualities. Okay, now, someone might hear that, or some of you might hear that and say, well, that sounds negative. That sounds kind of disempowering, that one is putting oneself down. How do we maintain self-confidence in ourselves? How can we be positive so that we don't have a negative mindset? How can we be positive so we can remain determined? This kind of humility sounds like it would undermine the attitudes we need, the consciousness we need to go forward in Krishna consciousness with some kind of enthusiasm and some kind of determination. It could, if we don't understand it properly, if we misapply it, then it could be very, very discouraging. And as I was saying earlier, one of the reasons that this happens, perhaps the main reason, is that we may have a very negative psychology. We may have a very little confidence in ourselves to start with. We may have very low levels of self-esteem. We may not feel that we are really worthy of anything. And then when we start attempting to manifest or understand feelings of humility, then it backfires. And then it just become very discouraged. And as I was saying before, what happens is, rather than becoming absorbed in Krishna, one becomes absorbed in feeling bad for oneself. Oh, I'm so bad, I'm so low, I'm so dirty, I'm so unworthy. That's not Krishna conscious humility. That's more of a neurosis, really. It's neurotic behavior. And it's not Krishna conscious because it's self-absorbed. Oh, me, 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 I'm bad, I'm low, my problems, this and that. It's not focused on Krishna. You see? So there is this like fine line between humility, which is empowering because it's genuine. It's a manifestation of actual spiritual advancement. And humility, which is an emotional problem, a mental problem, which is a result of our past conditioning, and we're allowing Krishna consciousness to feed on that. So sometimes someone may come to Krishna consciousness, and the Krishna consciousness itself could make one discouraged by looking at how fallen he or she is. You see, and then that realization of how fallen we are is confirming all the doubts we already have about ourselves, of being bad, of being unintelligent, of being unworthy, unqualified, useless, a failure. And many people think this way. So we have to be careful not to feed the disease, but rather, when it's a manifestation of spiritual advancement, or if I don't know how to manifest, I have to understand the proper attitude so I can manifest it, at least theoretically. I can understand how I should be thinking, and then try to think in that way, and try to act in a way that brings out the proper behavior. I mean, that's what Krishna consciousness often is. It's often understanding an attitude, understanding a certain level of consciousness, and then trying to adapt ourselves to behaviors which reflect that consciousness and see the world according to those values, even though they may not be ours totally. Even though they may be, we may consider those artificial for us or foreign, but understanding that those are the proper attitudes, then we try to adopt them in our mind. especially if we have the wrong attitude, which is making it difficult to be Krishna conscious. So I look at my psychology. I see, if I see a tendency to be self-absorbed, to be depressed about my disqualification, then we understand, no, that's not humility. That's not the helplessness that is Krishna consciousness. And that's not the feelings of unworthiness that are exhibited in a Krishna conscious way. But that's the wrong attitude. That's an attitude where I look at what's wrong with me, and I just become discouraged. And therefore we would say, that's Maya. Because anytime we become discouraged, who's discouraging us? It's not Krishna. Krishna won't discourage us. It's Maya. Now, one of the qualities of Krishna is that he only sees the good and he overlooks the bad. So certainly it's not Krishna who would discourage us, and it's not Krishna who is discouraged by who we are. What attracts Krishna is the attitude of the devotee, is the sense of wanting to connect with Krishna in the heart of the devotee. Not the anarthas that the devotee is facing. That doesn't deter Krishna from the relationship. Krishna's not bothered by that. He's not bothered by our disqualification. But it's actually, in a sense, our disqualification brings out more affection on Krishna's part. Interesting, right? Where we'll look at our disqualification and it won't necessarily inspire us, although it should, as I was saying. That's the proper way to look at our disqualification. But from Krishna's point of view, it draws a lot of emotion out of him when he sees our disqualification, because it means we need help. And so the catalyst for that help, as I was saying, is that we show Krishna, look it, I don't have what it takes. I need your help. We're not discouraged. It's just a realization of this is where I'm at and I need your help. So this is important. Now, if we look where we're at, if any of us look at where we're at, you know, if we make an inventory of where we're at and all the things we don't like about ourselves, all the bad qualities, it could be very discouraging. And your list could be very long. My list could be very long, right? I don't have these qualities, and I have these bad qualities, and I treat people this way, and I'm envious, and I'm jealous, and I've done so many bad things. We don't want to see it that way, but rather we just acknowledge, okay, this is the reality, and don't judge it as good or bad or whatever. It's just it's just what it is. It's an inventory of the results of our conditioned life in the material world. We just look at it like that. That's just what it is. It's what we brought in to this life, and this is what we're dealing with now. That's all it is. That's how we should see it. If we make a judgment on it, well, because I'm like this, therefore the result must be this way, then if that must be result that we're thinking of is negative, then we're going to be directed towards something negative, because we'll make an assumption that that's where I'm headed because this is who I am, and therefore I must be headed this way. This is a bad way to think. The proper way to think is, okay, here's my assessment. This is humility. Humility just means reality. This is who I am, and it's okay. Who I am is okay, because I'm in the process of purifying myself. So when you're in the process of purifying yourself, it's okay to be dirty. It's not okay to be dirty if you're not purifying yourself, because then you remain a conditioned soul. But if you're a conditioned soul, if you're dirty, it's okay if you're purifying yourself. So we take this inventory and say, okay, this is the inventory, this is the reality, right? It's just how it is. So we take that. Okay, hold on. My recording stopped. Crazy. We just lost about 5 minutes of that or more. That is depressing. So I don't know why it's doing that. So, well, anyway, it's recording on the video side, but the sound isn't as good. So, we take this inventory, right? Okay, this is the inventory. This is where I'm at, and we just take it at face value. It is what it is. And that's what it is, and so we take it that way, and that's just the way it is. Then we're not upset about it, we're not discouraged by it, it's just, this is it, this is what I'm dealing with, this is what I've got in this life, this is what I've created from my past activities. Okay, so now I look at these things and then I see them, okay, these I may have so many disqualifications. Okay, so what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I'm disqualified. The only thing that matters for a devotee, and this is really, really important, really the essence, the only thing that matters for a devotee is his desire to be Krishna conscious, his sincerity of purpose, his willingness, or her, to follow the orders of Krishna and Guru and the Vaishnavas with determination, unfailingly, despite one's own defects, not being discouraged by them, not being deterred by them, not focusing on them, not lamenting about them, materially lamenting, but accepting them, acknowledging them, and using them to appeal to Krishna for his mercy and his help. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written many songs exactly in this mood. Just a list of disqualifications. And one of the reasons he lists these disqualifications is so that he has the right to ask Krishna for mercy. I mean, you know, if you're a millionaire, you don't have the right to go out begging, asking people for money. You don't need it. But if you have nothing, you have the right to ask. So it's something like that. So in that sense, we can use this inventory of disqualifications as justification to approach Krishna and say, okay, Krishna, I need you. I need your mercy. I need the mercy of Guru. I need all the help I can get. I need all the guidance I can get from within because I don't have what it takes. So this is how we see our disqualification. We see our disqualification as our qualification for asking for mercy. Interesting, isn't it? It's never a discouragement. In fact, it's an encouragement. It's like you can't get welfare if you're wealthy. You can get it if you're poor. So you get welfare, Krishna conscious welfare, if you're poor, and we're all poor. Patita also means, aside from fallen, it also means poor. So we're all poor, right? Poor in spiritual life. And the thing to understand is that this kind of helplessness is a foundational principle of surrender. And it's the basis of humility, and without humility, we're not going anywhere. Prabhupada says, humility is the first item of knowledge, because You see, without humility, one cannot accept higher authority, higher knowledge, submissively. One cannot surrender to a guru without humility. That's an act of humility to surrender. And so, what does pride mean? Pride means I assess that I have good qualities, that I have qualifications, which can enable me to achieve anything I want. And so this is the foundation of material consciousness. You can achieve anything you want if you set your mind to it. And the foundation of spiritual consciousness is I can only achieve anything by Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, I'm helpless. That's the foundation of humility. It is, you know, it's a totally opposite way of thinking from material consciousness, which is very dependent on I can do it. I can make it happen by my own efforts. Now, of course, it doesn't mean we don't try. It just means we understand how dependent we are on Krishna's guidance, on Krishna giving us intelligence. I want to read something. Does anybody have any questions? If not, I want to read something. Yes, as you say, Masenja, we are all beggars. That is so important. Because you see, whenever pride comes, what happens? Pride connects with false ego. And then we think, I did that. Because that's how we get acknowledgement. And we want that acknowledgement. Beyond false ego, we're not looking for acknowledgement, and therefore it's easy to admit that it was Krishna who did it, and I was an instrument. Now, it's true that the more we surrender, the more Krishna will use us as an instrument. That's a fact, for sure. But still, we feel humbled that Krishna uses us as an instrument. So even if you do something wonderful, you should feel Krishna is so kind that he used someone as fallen as I to do his work. We shouldn't feel, oh, it's because I'm surrendered that Krishna used me. We should feel, because I am so helpless and so wretched and so useless, Krishna showed his kindness upon me. Now, you can't artificially feel yourself useless and wretched. But gradually, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, some sense of that will be there. And it's not that you can't function normally because you think you're wretched, low, fallen, this and that. As Prabhupada said, at the feet of the guru, you should feel yourself a fool, but you shouldn't act foolishly. So there is a balance there. There is, Prabhupada said, I'm proud to be Krishna's devotee. So there's this other side of the equation. But that pride is not material. Or the confidence, yes, I can do this by Krishna's grace. It's not coming from false ego. So we shouldn't be timid. We shouldn't, the attitude of helplessness should not make us weak. But it can make us very confident also in Krishna, in succeeding, because Krishna's helping us. Now, as I was saying before, we don't want to go to this extreme of artificial humility. I'm so useless, I'm so wretched, I'm so fallen, I'm so this or that. It's a nice sentiment because the advanced devotees think that way and we want to develop that attitude. But it can become so artificial if it goes too far that it really has no meaning. It's just words. And inside we may be very proud, and with our mouths we may say, oh, I'm very fallen, I'm very low. But we don't mean it. So we don't, that's not what we're dealing with. We don't, that's not what we want. That's not humility, just to go around and say I'm fallen. In fact, One devotee made a very astute, observation. He made an astute observation. He said, sometimes we do that. We'll walk around and say, oh, I'm the most fallen, I'm the most this or that. Because we don't want anybody to point it out in us. So if we just tell people, I'm fallen, I'm useless, I'm stupid, then no one has to tell us that we're fallen, useless, and stupid when we do something stupid. So sometimes we can use it to protect ourselves, to protect our ego from anybody having to, prevent anybody from saying anything that we don't want to hear about ourselves, or we don't want to admit about ourselves. So we just go, oh, I'm this or that. No, I don't want anybody to tell me that because that would destroy my ego. I wouldn't be able to bear it. So I'll just say it. Interesting, isn't it? So these are things that we can contemplate within ourselves. Now I wanted, it's 8:55 already, and I have one of my daughter's friends here, and I need to take her home soon. But I wanted to read something Prabhupada wrote. And I think we'll find it relevant. Let's see. I don't know the question that's being asked. Oh yeah, here. He's expressing some glorification to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, I thank you very much for your nice sentiments so expressed in this letter that I am not unreasonable. Rather, you have taken the responsibility on your part. Not sure what that is. Here's the main point of the letter comes now. Actually, we are all conditioned souls. So our demand from Krishna to accept us is unreasonable. Interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada's saying, we have absolutely no right to ask Krishna to accept us. And we talked about this last week when this devotee expressed this exact sentiment that I can't ask Krishna to accept me because I've rejected him. I have no right to ask. From my personal point of view, I think that I am so sinful that I cannot even approach Krishna to show me any favor. But I have only one hope, my spiritual master. He is very kind. So here's a key, and we spoke about this last week, that even though we feel disqualified, we don't give up hope because we can't give up that desire. You know, like sometimes, you know, a poor man wants to become rich and there's no way he can do it. He has no facility at the present time, but he can't give up the desire. Sometimes we want something and objectively speaking, it doesn't look like we can get it. But sometimes we want it so much it doesn't matter. We just can't give up the desire. So this is the attitude of the devotee. And so Prabhupada says, I'm so sinful, I cannot approach Krishna to show me any favor. So I can't even ask Krishna. But I have only one hope, my spiritual master. He is very kind. So some way or other, he is dragging me towards Krishna. That is the only hope. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita says, therefore, Guru Krishna, by the mercy of the spiritual master and by the mercy of Krishna, one gets into Krishna consciousness. Narada Muni is our original spiritual master, and he has dragged so many fallen souls towards Krishna. And we are also hoping to be dragged by him through the disciplic succession. Otherwise, if we study our own qualifications, there is none. Rather, I have got so many disqualifications. So, we're talking about Krishna being Patita Pavana, Mahaprabhu being Patita Pavana. So that Patita Pavana, the mercy to the fallen, is distributed by the spiritual master and the representatives of the spiritual master. So that is how Krishna shows his affection and kindness. The devotee understands, I have no right to ask Krishna, but I depend on the mercy of the Vaishnavas. I depend on the mercy of my gurus. I depend on the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So you see the psychology is that The devotee is always looking for a way to get the mercy, even though he doesn't believe or she doesn't believe she deserves it. She can't go to Krishna and go, here's my medals. You know, I fought the war for you, and decorate me and let me in. I've come to Vaikuntha, let me in. He feels, no, if you look at my qualifications, I'll never get in. So, as I said earlier, Krishna never rejects the service of anyone. He'll always accept it. And because the devotee wants to serve, then what does Krishna do? He sends the spiritual master. And he says, you serve the spiritual master. The spiritual master is dear to me. He'll offer that service to his guru. And eventually that service will be offered to me. So that means that no matter what the disqualification is, Krishna will always make an arrangement for us to get him. Isn't that nice? It'll always be there. So if we come to this point of feeling helpless, useless, what's the point? Let me give up. Then it kind of undermines the whole principle of Krishna's willingness to save us. And therefore, a devotee, he's very encouraged. Even though he's got all these bad qualities, he's very encouraged. What's he encouraged by? By the mercy of Guru, by the mercy of the holy name, by the instructions of Krishna, by the Sangha of the devotees. All these things are very encouraging. And it has nothing to do with our status as devotees. These activities in and of themselves can elevate us to the highest levels of Krishna consciousness. The activities themselves, the practices themselves, contain within them the potency to elevate us to the highest levels of Krishna consciousness. It has nothing to do with us. All we have to do is execute the processes sincerely. Qualified, not qualified, intelligent, not intelligent, young man, old man, young woman, old woman, college educated, high school dropout, 185 IQ, no IQ, that doesn't matter. Bhakti is not caused by anything material. You know, if you're very qualified, but you become proud of your qualifications, then you totally become disqualified. But if you're completely disqualified, but totally dependent on Krishna, and totally desirous of being Krishna conscious, then you get all the help. And in that sense, you become the most qualified. So it's so important for us to develop, to look at ourselves, assess ourselves, and then use that assessment to make us very, 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 to make us feel very helpless and always be dependent on Krishna for everything. And this is how we succeed in Krishna consciousness, way beyond any qualification that we have on our own. In fact, we can just be waiting for Krishna to empower us, to give us intelligence. You know, I was explaining a few weeks ago that Prabhupada said that the sannyasis he made at the time that he made them were not qualified to be sannyasis. But he needed sannyasis, so he made them. And that's why he made them, because he needed them. That was it. And so how does a devotee think when the spiritual master asks him or her to do something for which he or she feels unqualified? Okay, Guru Maharaj, this is what you want, so let me execute your order. In dependence that you will guide me and give me the intelligence. Sometimes we may think, I have to wait till I'm fully qualified before I execute the service. We may never be fully qualified, or the only way we may ever be fully qualified is to execute the service. I was telling that story, I believe, last week, how Prabhupada was crying because he had to come to America and he felt unqualified to do the service. So he's crying. He said, my spiritual master has given me an order that I'm not qualified to execute. But you see, still the consciousness is that the order is given, so I must execute it, even I'm not qualified. Right? Interesting, isn't it? And that's one of the ways we become qualified. Okay, hold on, everybody. We have a message from my daughter. Yes, it's time to go. I'm going to take her home. Okay, so I have to go soon. I'm the stay-home mom for 5 more days. So Ms. Senja is thinking it would only be inspiring, I would think, if we are not self-absorbed in looking at God. We're aware of ourself as disqualified. But we're looking for Krishna, we're looking towards Krishna for the very reason that we are disqualified. Because you see, when people feel themselves very qualified, they don't look to God because they don't feel they need Him. Right? Why do they need God? They can do it themselves. Right? Isn't it? So, I thank you all for watching, and I think I'm going to get in trouble if we don't stop now. And thank you, Emotion. Okay. We have a few comments, so I'll just address them, see, because I didn't see these before. Pollock Pioneer says, sometimes I act feeling fallen so that people don't expect anything of me. Yeah. That's a good realization that you do that. You kind of want to protect yourself from having to be responsible for being Krishna conscious, and as long as you prove you're not, no one will expect you to be anything more than fallen. Yeah. That is a problem that needs to be addressed, yes. Carol says, does the idea of being fallen come from thinking about there would be many lifetimes we were self-serving? It could be. It could come from many ideas. That could be one of them. It sounds like what you're saying, it could be we're accepting our conditioning. Oh, no, This is the way I am, and it's just, there's nothing I can do about it. That may be true, that this is the way we are, and there's nothing we can do about it, but it doesn't mean Krishna can't do something about it. It doesn't mean the guru can't do something, the mercy of the guru. It doesn't mean the process of bhakti can't uplift us. So we don't want to be fatalistic. And the whole story of Jagai and Madai was just to show that if someone takes the process of bhakti, they can be purified. I always feel that our shelter is in the holy name, the sangha, the hearing of Bhagavatam. These activities are like a rocket ship. And so when we do these activities, we're just in the rocket ship. We're not making the rocket ship go. It's not our power. It's the power of the rocket ship. But we press the button and it goes. So it's very much like that. And so if we understand that it's not us, whatever we've done in the past, and however we find ourselves fallen now, okay, that's one thing. But if you get in the rocket ship, even though you're not qualified to fly that high, the rocket ship will take you. And so we need faith in the processes of bhakti, that they will do that. It's not about us doing it. It's about bhakti doing it. And if we understand that, it's about the mercy of Guru and Krishna doing it. Then we're not worried about our qualification or disqualification, because we realize that is not what is important. But what is important is that we execute the process of bhakti, and then that will do it. Okay. Is there anything else? I think that's it. Okay. Thank you, everyone. And we will see you next Tuesday. I will be up in somewhere, Edison or somewhere. And we will see you there. And Hare Krishna to all of you.